Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are just as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They're milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to So Bad It's Good with Ryan Bailey, presented by Betches Media. This is an exploration of all pop culture, from the classic reality TV moments of the past and present to the latest Daily Mail headlines and everything in between. We'll dive into all the infamous and notorious messes you can't stop watching. We're looking at you, Tom Sandoval. Folks, welcome to another episode of So Bad It's Good with Ryan Bailey. This is your pal Ryan, and this is your Wednesday episode. You have officially made it halfway through the week. When we get to Wednesday, it's all systems go. You can phone it in the rest of the week. I give you official permission. So clock out and clock into this new episode, folks. No, I hope you're doing good. It's Tuesday night when I'm recording this. I just watched Vanderpump Rules, that pit of hell, and I watched The Valley again. Did you guys watch it? Do you like it? What do you think? They did the seamless transition. The connector was Jax from the last scene in Vanderpump Rules to the first scene in The Valley. Very fitting, knowing that Vanderpump Rules was spun off of Real Housewives of Beverly Hills and Summer House was spun off of Vanderpump Rules. So I thought that was well done. We'll be talking more about that on Thursday and Friday's episode. I'm on the fence. Should I recap The Valley? We're done with Beverly Hills. I don't know. What did you guys think? I think there's stuff to talk about, but I want to know what you guys think, so let me know. Hopefully you enjoyed the Quiet On Set directors. I thought that was such a powerful docuseries, and I know, we get really silly here. But I really appreciate that you let me go to those places, and tackle issues like that. Because I think, like all of us, my tastes don't just lie in one place. It's all over the map. And it truly is. I mean, I enjoy and love so many things. And that's another thing too, is that I think this show, even though it is snarky at times, it really does come from a place of love. I get so excited. I was talking to a guest today. I did two interviews today. I interviewed some of the cast from Summer House Martha's Vineyard, which premieres on Sunday. And I really loved the first episode of that. And then I interviewed a comedian, actor, comedian, and podcaster that I've loved forever. And I just had the best time interviewing both of those people. Especially with the second one, the comedian, I was so excited. I didn't want it to end. Like at the end, when I don't think that interview is going to come out for like a month and a half or 2 months when his book comes out. But I mean, at the end, I was just like throwing in things to keep the conversation going. And it was just so great. It was so great. And I think sometimes people are like, just too excitable, but that's just me. I'm excitable. Like that. This is because I think so much of my life, I am not excitable. So it's really nice to find those places where you are passionate, where you feel like giving a fuck, or your BPM goes up, because it's like, that's the whole bit. That's the whole thing, is getting excited about something. And I think sometimes we get excited about the same thing, you and me. I love that. I love this little community. Shout out to the baddies over there on Patreon. Thank you so much. We'll be doing a couple new episodes starting on Friday over there. So sign up if you want to hear those. That Q&A episode was really, really fun. Thank you for all the positive reviews on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. I appreciate all of that. My dad says hello, by the way. I'm seeing my dad very soon, and I'll make sure he comes back on the pod. But we had a funny conversation today. I hope you guys are doing well. I did want to talk about something really quickly before we get to our guest. And by the way, our guest today, I have this interview has been done for like the last month and a half, and I was trying to find the right place to put it. And it was really hard with the recaps and stuff like that. But we have Rashida Sheeds Olayawala, and that name might not sound familiar to you yet, but I think one day, someday soon, it will be very familiar, because she actually was in the hit Emmy-nominated comedy series Jury Duty. She played bailiff Nikki, And I thought she was hysterical. And I got to talk to her a while back about, you know, where she came from, how she got into this comedy. And it's a little, you know, it's a little different than what we usually do in terms of like focusing on reality shows. But this is another thing, is that I think everybody has a story. I get really inspired by people's journeys, you know, how they got to point A to point B. How did you wind up in this show, Jury Duty? Which, by the way, if you haven't, go watch Jury Duty. It's free on Amazon Prime and Freevee. And it was one of the best comedy series I saw last year. And I think people will be talking about that show for years to come. And she was just a delight in that show. And she was so fun to talk to. And she had such a good spirit. You know, those people you just feel, you're like, and it's hard sometimes because you do a lot of these interviews and they're over Zoom or Riverside or any of these apps that you use. And it sometimes takes away from that person, you know, that person to person experience. But I think I've become pretty adept at doing that. But even still, sometimes there's like a distance between you and the guest. And she was just so great. Her energy was, I just felt that. And I hope you guys feel that as well. And it reminded me a lot of me coming up or trying to come up as an actor and spending so many years doing that. And what a struggle that is. You know, how much goes into that. And it's not just being talented. Wouldn't it be just easy if it was just the talented people? But no, talent is a very small part of making it. Talent, it's work. It is work. And it is getting those right opportunities. And then sometimes that's when talent comes into play. But it is just work, opportunity, luck, preparation, all of that stuff goes into it. And the older I get, the more I am livid at my parents that let me try to be an actor because they didn't, like, why didn't they forcibly try to stop me? No, it just, you realize the odds are stacked against you. And I think you might be able to relate to that in your own lives where you feel like the odds are stacked against us in so many different ways in life. You know, you're trying to do this thing. There seems to be so many roadblocks in your path. Like anything that's worth doing always seems to be the hardest thing to do. And even I still don't understand why it's like that. And maybe that's just so it's sweeter when you actually do that, realizing how much hard work went into it. But the journey in anything is everything, right? It's sometimes not the, you know, it's all that bullshit that you hear, but it actually turns out to be true. It's not the destination. It's the journey to get there. That's where the true magic lies. And I was thinking about my journey and I was thinking sometimes, you know, doesn't it seem, and even with this podcast or all the podcasts out there, there's just so much of everything right now. We are constantly bombarded. And I hate to get this thought even into your head because you're just going to shut off this podcast potentially and just listen to the quiet, which is okay, but then come back to the podcast. There's just so much of everything now, all the time. You know, our phones nonstop. You got the socials, Instagram, YouTube, Snapchat, TikTok, you know, on top of the real people that are actually in our lives, on top of all the shows we watch, the movies, the music we consume, everything. It is so much. I don't know how kids are discerning at all anymore. Because when I was a kid, this is where this is kind of headed. I was talking to this guest today and I was talking about, we both had worked at Blockbuster Video Store. Now, kids, for you kids out there listening, you are going to want to hang on to your coal mining asses because this is going to blow you away. There used to be a brick and mortar store where you would go to rent films because a lot of them weren't on TV. You couldn't stream them. You had to go in and there wasn't even DVD. You might have heard of DVDs. This is before then. VHS. You had VHS. And there would be these big hubs, Blockbuster Video, Hollywood Video, all of these kind of, you know, these big chain locations that you would go and get your movie. And you would hope, you would pray to all of the gods that the movie you wanted, hopefully a new release, would be there when you went in there. And it would determine your whole weekend or determine your night. And it was a crapshoot. It was like, oh my God, are they going to have Jurassic Park 2? Are they going to have the rom-com? Are they going to have Sleepless in Seattle? Are they going to have You Got Mail? Are they going to have that one? You got to be at the right place at the right time, entering that video store. Is somebody returning a movie at the same time? What movie are they returning? All of these things would go into your head when you went in there. You know, your whole, it was so important. And I was able to get a job at Blockbuster Video. And I got to tell you, the delusion I was under is thinking, oh my God, I've got a foothold in the industry. I am in the entertainment industry now. I am pretty much working at a movie studio right now. None of that it was true at all, but I was like 15 years old. So, you know, not working with a full deck and still am not. But that's not the point. The point is I got hired at a Blockbuster Video and that was the dream. It really was. I was like, holy shit. And the funny thing is, and I talked about this with the guests that you'll hear, unfortunately, you're not going to hear him for a couple of months, but we were talking and I was reading his book and he talked about this and I've told people this before and they said I was full of shit. I'm like, no, Blockbuster Video, they took a sample of your hair. They drug test. That's how far Blockbuster Video, when I got hired, they had to snip a little curl of mine and send it away for drug testing before I got the job. Isn't that wild? That's how serious Blockbuster Video took themselves. And now I'm wondering if it was all a ruse. They just wanted to scare people. Yeah, okay, you know, but like they just kept a bunch of hair in the back room. But man, when I got that job, I thought, whew, I am surrounded by everything that I love. Every movie known to man is in this store. And you got free rentals. You could take home free rentals. And the thing would be great is if you had the night shift, and then if it was a weekend, and then you had the morning shift, and that was when you could stay up all night. Didn't mean a thing. It was totally doable. You'd take home the good movies at the end of the night and then just make sure you brought them back in at the morning at your shift. And I was back in the day, I would put, there's these things, guys, called VCRs where the VHS tape would go into. But the thing you would like kind of, you know, work the system is that you would hook up two VCRs together and you could copy one video to the other VCR and dub the VHS. So I had all the new releases. I dubbed all of those things. I was a copying machine. My VHS collection for a 15-year-old was insane. And, you know, you used to be able to, like, these VHS tapes, you could put, like, 6 hours of material. So you'd pick the three movies that you'd want together on a tape. And I remember I had a couple favorite. My one favorite that I loved was I had National Lampoon's Vacation, Caddyshack, and the movie Speed with Keanu Reeves. And that was one of my favorite VHSs that I had dubbed those three movies onto one cassette. And I would just put it on and I would fall asleep to it every night. And I would usually end up, you know, waking up to like Keanu Reeves, like, you don't want to do that, man. Get away from that bus. It was magical. It was a magical time. Before DVDs, before Blu-rays, before, like, we just keep adding, but it was so simple because it was like right at the beginning of the internet too. So we didn't have everything at our disposal. So anything that you were around or got to be a part of felt like magic. I got to be in a room full of movies before I could actually just sit there on my fat butt and watch anything I wanted at any time, but I still can't find anything to watch. Do you get what I'm saying? It was magic. That journey of being able to find a way to watch what you love. And I don't know. That's why I think I'm just confused these days, because there's so much to love. That's not the problem. But how do we pick and choose? How do we make sure also our lives aren't wasted by just consumption? These are way too big of thoughts for a Wednesday show. But anyways, more Blockbuster Video stories. That's the other thing, too. In Arizona, I was in charge of, like, they would have a Dropbox. It was, like, you would have the Dropbox that was connected to the Blockbuster Video, but also there was, like, this Dropbox outside, like, you know, 100 feet away, where you would have to, big thing, where you could drive up, return your movie, and I would have to go with a couple big milk crates and get all of the, you know, people that dropped in their movies. You'd have to load them into these milk crates, bring them into the store, check in the movies, see who rewound. Be kind, rewind, folks. That was an actual saying, to rewind. That's, you kids, you didn't know what it was like. You had to rewind the movie. You know, it added a whole 3 minutes to anything that you did when you returned a movie, or you get like a fine for that. You'd also get late fees if you didn't turn in the movie on time. But I would go out to this box and you would have people out there going, hey, man, did anybody turn in this film? Like, they would be hounding you. It was like you were like a low level celebrity. It was like you were a reality star. But it was great. Like, I got to take home the cardboard cutouts. I've told this story many times. I worked at a movie theater and Blockbuster Video and a Hollywood Video. And from each of these, I would like get the movie posters that nobody wanted or the cardboard stand-ins that you'd see in the movie theaters or, you know, Blockbuster. And I had in my shitty car that I drove, in the back seat, I had a Sister Act 2 Whoopi Goldberg cardboard stand-in. So it looked like Whoopi Goldberg with the nun habit. And on the other side, I had Catwoman from Batman Returns. And even though I'm the one that put those there, every time I would walk out of my place, it would scare the shit out of me. I would think two people are in my car. I'm like, holy shit, there's a nun in my car. Never, it would just automatically scare me all the time. Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yeah, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So, the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
But this is how big of a nerd I was. I would just drive around in this car with those cardboard stand-ins in the back windows, and I would be blasting something idiotic like the Grease 2 soundtrack or Harry Connick Jr. or En Vogue, and I just thought I was a badass. I mean, I don't even think I knew what a badass was, and I probably, if I knew that definition, would definitely not say a badass, but I felt liberated. I felt on top of the world. And don't you long for that sometimes? And that's the thing, too, is when you think about those stories, if you are of a certain age, I can't immediately go back and look at pictures of that. I don't think I have any pictures of me working at Blockbuster Video. I didn't carry around a camera. I didn't have a phone yet. You know, cellular phones were just getting going. So I didn't have a documentation of my life. But you know what's funny, I was thinking too, is that I have this camera on my phone that I carry around, and most of the photos on there are screenshots of reality stars, of like things to make memes of. I took a picture of a bird in the sky the other day, and I think that was like the first real picture I've taken in a long time that wasn't something to do with pop culture. But it's kind of nice. It's kind of nice that I don't have access to pictures of that. It's nice. There's something nice because it makes you actually even like hone in on those memories even more and really think about it. Really think about it. And it was so funny because I was what, 15, 16? And I remember we had a manager, but then I remember there was this guy that got hired, and I thought, oh man, this guy's an old man. And I think he was only like 28 years old. But I, you know, if you're 15 or 16, you're like, holy shit, that guy's, man, that's like cocoon. I remember one day my manager comforting him. He was crying. He had moved, I think, from somewhere to Arizona. And I asked my manager, what's wrong? Is he okay? And it was just that he was lonesome. He had moved somewhere. He didn't know anybody here yet. He was crying. And I just thought, holy shit. Like, and you don't think about getting older. You do, you know, when you're young, you don't really think. You think, oh, that'll never happen to me. Oh, I'll never be that way. Oh, there's no way. You know, you almost feel like the guy had a disease or something because he was crying. You're like, whoa, holy shit. But now I think about that and think about all those memories. And you guys have those memories too, of all those times that you were sad or those times as you got older and you got scared or you got lonely. And, you know, those aren't just child feelings. And as an adult, you have them. And sometimes they're even more intense as an adult. And I don't know. It's so interesting. It's so interesting to think about how I thought about that then and how I look at that now. it's just a part of life that everybody goes through. We all go through that, and not that it was some kind of disease or sickness that somebody was going through, you know? I don't know. These thoughts all were spilling around in my head today, so I figured I'd share them with you before we got to this guest, which I hope you will hang around for, because I thought she was just amazing. So, ladies and gentlemen, let's get to our guest today. It's Rashida Sheeds Olayiwala from Jury Duty and so many other things that we talk about. But I hope you have the best Wednesday ever. Go check out the other episodes if you haven't. And remember, come back here on Thursday for our Vanderpump Rules recap. We will go over that Tom Sandoval pool scene, the saddest pool scene I've seen since Jaws. I mean, it was honestly that body of water. Like, it was like, I felt like that was like Titanic all over again. The desperation in that body of water, it just couldn't. That's just got to ruin the chlorine entirely. So anyways, here she is, our guest. I'll talk to you on Thursday. And thanks for all your support, guys. Bye. Welcome back to So Bad It's Good, presented by Betches Media. Today, I am so excited. You've heard me talking about this show, what I believe now for like, it feels like forever since it's been released over on Freevee or Amazon, which is Freevee's their version, like on Amazon Prime, where you can watch all of these amazing shows. But Freevee had this amazing show that came out called Jury Duty. It was actually just nominated for Best Comedy Series at the Emmys. And part of me almost thought they would take it. They would kind of slip in there, because I think it is one of the most unique shows to come on television in this past year. And basically what it did was it presented a jury duty situation where there were 11 actors and one real person. And they did this whole series where Ronald Gladden, the real person, didn't realize he was actually the star of a TV show, kind of like a Truman Show-esque experiment that went completely right. James Marsden killed it. We had Trisha LaFosh on, Marianne Russell on from the show. But today we have one of my, if not my favorite character on the show. We have Bailiff Nikki. Now, she is an amazing actor, a writer. She comes from Chicago. She came up in improvisation, stand-up. She is taking Hollywood by storm. And I just got to tell you, every time she popped up on Jury Duty, every episode, she provided so much laughter. And I think I was a little scared of her by the end. But truly somebody that you need to watch. She is going to be popping up everywhere. We're going to talk about all of her projects and the process of Jury Duty. So, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Rashida Sheeds Olayiwala. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much, man. That's an interest. That's what I'm talking about, Ryan. They need to give you an Emmy for interests.
That would be an amazing, possibly boring category, but I would love to be up for it.
Not if you win it, but thank you so much. You didn't tell not one lie.
Listen, you are so multi-talented that I don't even think people realize, because we saw you on Jury Duty and you knocked that out of the park. But then doing research, I mean, you are a writer. Southside, Diallo Riddle was on this show. You wrote on that as well, right?
I was one of the writers and co-stars of Southside, HBO. That's my whole heart was, I started out with those guys with Bashir and Diallo. They actually, I don't want to say discovered, but they actually found out about me coming to my stand-up sets. When I was just on tour doing stand-up everywhere. Like, I was working so hard between LA, New York, and Chicago, and they would come to my shows at the Brunson Bar. And then Diallo would... he would go in my inbox and be like, "You were so funny tonight." That's just the type of guy he is. He'd be like, "You so funny, you're so funny." And then Bashir, I didn't really know him at the time like that, but I would see just this football-esque looking dude who I'm like, I know I've seen him somewhere. But that's how they hired me to be a writer on Sherman Showcase on Hulu and AMC. And then that literally a month in the room, after a month in that room, they were like, "We need you on Southside. We want you to write on Southside." And they allowed me to create characters for myself, because I didn't know what I was, had a name, until just like maybe 2 years ago. Someone was like, "Man, you so dope. You're a multifaceted person." I'm like, "What the hell did you just say?" They're like, well, you, right. I'm like, I didn't know this had a name. Just like, I didn't know improv had a name until I'm an alum of the Second City in IO.
And yeah.
I thought improv was just go downstairs in the basement and play, because that's what my grandma used to tell me and all my cousins. And we would just make up things to play with. But I am a multi-hyphenate, multifaceted individual, being a comedian, writer, and actress. And I'm in love with all three.
But I mean, I love that. And I love the journey. You're from Chicago, like you said, like not even knowing, like kind of just like that's how you were raised, is making people laugh, putting yourself in imaginary situations. And people don't really have a name for that. And then when you start training, and there's so much work that goes into this, but I think that's so fascinating about, you know, you probably didn't even realize they had classes for improvisation, you know?
No. I didn't know about those places until I was like, I was in my last year of college. I went to NIU for undergrad, and I remember the Second City, they would do touring. They had a touring company, and their touring company came to my school. And the black kids at my school, I was in a program called Black Theater Workshop. And I remember at the time we were doing a rendition of Spike Lee's School Days. And so my theater coach was like, hey, the Second City's diversity program gave us tickets for, and we were all like, the who? Mind you, I'm born and bred Chicago. And then like 80% of those other people were born and bred Chicago. And we didn't know what that was, because in Chicago, it is very segregated. Like black people are here, white people here, Asian here, but we all come together when it's time to defend Chicago. We didn't know what that place was. So I just went, and they have a portion of the show where they asked for people to participate and come up. And I was like, I'll go up there. And I killed it. And the head of diversity after that, she was like, yo, I want to talk to you, because I don't know if you know what you're doing, but we'd love to have you at this institution. I was like, whatever. I moved to New York for like a year and a half, did some grad school stuff. But when I came back to Chicago, I remembered the card that I had from her. And I ended up getting the Puma scholarship for Second City of Chicago, where I did the writing program. I did I'm a improv pro. Like, I did that.
I mean, just so people know, Second City is where they discovered Jim Belushi, Chris Farley.
Amy Pollard,
Bob Odenkirk, everybody.
The dude from Cheers. Like, I met, like, these are people who have given me their, you know, have given me their blessings of like, and like how proud of me they were, like heroes. I would walk through those halls and be like, man, you know, this is insane. And same with IO, with Improv Olympics of Chicago. I mean, I put up my own shows that used to sell out weekly at these places.
And Sharna Halpern, does IO. I mean, like, that's wild though. And just so people, they don't really realize how that scene works. It is so hard to get in that scene. And then see Untapped Talent, where they actually court you. I mean, how hard was it for you to actually then start learning the rules of improvisation? And did that ever take away your enjoyment from the process itself?
Well, yeah, my journey was different, and it's going to always be different, because I am a black woman in America. And just to be real.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, being from Chicago, from the inner city of Chicago where black people are, it was hard coming into that and having other people put you in a box, or, you know, you had cliques of like, not just I'm a woman, as again, I'm a black woman. So I came into these spaces that were very white. So I came into things where we would be in classrooms and they would stereotype me and be like, well, you're going to play this drug dealer, or she's going to be angry. And I'm like, but I'm none of those things, you know? And it wasn't until I used my art of gift giving where I was like, I'm going to stand in my power. I'm going to be goofy, and I'm going to create, because I'm a visionary. So I'm like, I'm going to navigate through this. And, you know, it was very, very hard, very, very challenging. But I came out of there with people such as myself, Lisa Beasley, who's killing it, Dwayne Perkins. Like, these are close friends. Sam Bailey, who's one of the directors of the Marvel movie series that I'm in. Like these.
Yeah. By the way, she's in the Marvel cinematic. She's in the Marvel universe now, folks. She's in a show called Ironheart that's going to be coming out sometimes in 2024. Marvel keeps everything secret, but you're literally now in the Marvel universe now. In the
Marvel cinematic universe. I got a whole name that I cannot say. I got a whole character that I am. That you will see, but I'm like It's like we came in a place where we found each other, and that's another thing that people need to know. You come into these spaces that they say aren't for you, but I made it for me. And
yes.
You come out, you find your people. I found my people. Yeah. I found like me and Cecily Strong. That's one of my best. That's my sis.
Oh
like,
God. She's amazing.
Yeah. She reached for me. When I was coming into Second City, she was on her way out. But she saw me and was like, hey, I love you. I love what you're doing. I love the type of person you are. And she was the first person that gave me the invitation to SNL to kind of see how that whole world worked. Kenan Thompson's a big brother to me. He saw me. He saw my light from 8 years ago and was like, yo, whatever you need, I got you. However, I need to see you grow. Heidi Gardner, Ego Wodum, these are my friends.
I mean, that's like, so hard, though. I mean, you need that in your career to have people that support you that are doing. I mean, this is such a weird lifestyle that not a lot of people understand how it all works. To have those type of people that are doing it support you has got to mean the world for you. But also, it seems like, have you always had this inner belief in yourself?
Always. Since I was the furthest that I can remember, my grandmother said when I was 4, she knew that I was like special spiritually. I believe in myself. I work while God works. I believe in my people. And I'm just very organic and genuine. Like everything about me is real. They used to call me real. Like I had to change, like before the nickname She's came, they'd be like, real She's. And I'm like, cause I would keep it real. Not in a way where it's like, it's a difference between being real and then being a bitch. I'm not a bitch. Nobody likes a bitch, but I'm real. I'm always moving with love and with intention and with light. So it's like, that's why these relationships that I have, they're so genuine because they come from a genuine place. It's not me being in somebody's inbox like, please help me.
Yes.
It's like, no, I'm just going to be myself. And if you fall in love, cool. If you don't, cool.
But it seems like people are just drawn to you. And I think that's even watching Jury Duty. You kind of pull us in as the audience. And I want to get to Jury Duty in a second, but just one more thing.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
About coming up is that when you don't have, like, you know, you couldn't have predicted about improvisation. You couldn't have, like, so when you were a kid, what were your dreams? Like, what, I mean, did you want to be a doctor or an astronaut?
No, I did want to be, it was either doing what I'm doing now. I just didn't know what it was called. I fell in love with movies as a little kid. We would watch movies on the sun porch as a family. So even if the movie was rated R, because I was watching it with my mom, my uncles, my grandma, it was okay. Because, you know, if a sex scene came on, they used to be like, all right, y'all head on out. And then they would bring us back in and we'd be like, what? I had to miss that part. But I knew that I loved telling stories. I knew that I was always funny. My mom would be like, this girl. Like, I was always rewriting songs, making them my own. I had my own rap group. It was called Junior Bone Thugs and Harmony. And my mom would be like, I appreciate my mother for embracing that. Because she could have been like, all my teachers, all my report cards, they'd be like, shit, she's smart. But she's always, like, in another world. In her own little world. And my mom will always say that, like, this girl, I never had FOMO. I never cared about missing out. And I just be like, no, I want to do this. I want to read this book. Or I want to write this. Or I want to draw this. I knew that I knew it was always in me. It was either what I'm doing now, an astronaut or a DJ. That was my list.
By the way, you can play an astronaut and a DJ now. Like, I mean, that's part of the great thing about what you do you get to live in all these different worlds and you get to write your own worlds. Most people don't have the talent of writing. When did you discover that you were also good at, like, putting pen to page and writing your own material?
It was college when I knew I was really good because my teacher, I love her. I wish I could remember her name. I had so many, but my literature teacher in college, I wrote this story. We had an assignment where you had to pick a picture and then write a story about it, right? Like a 10-page story. And I drew it was a picture of a black girl ballerina. That was it. It had no words, no nothing. So I wrote the assignment and she had hit me up over email and was like, this is incredible. I want to enter it into a contest. She entered into this literary college contest and I won. It was called Who's Who of Colleges and Universities. And she was like, you have a gift of like visionized, like writing. Like she was like, and then you're funny, you know how to. And it was her who spoke to me. And then one of my high school teachers, she had told me I had a gift. But in high school, I really was like, I was playing basketball, soccer, and being a class clown, but I was always very smart and always very funny. And it wasn't until like college when I was like, okay, I need to do this. And then after college, graduating, you know, when I went to these places like Second City and IO that showed me how to structure it, I got a structure. It was a done deal. I was like, oh, I know what I'm doing. And then it was like the people like Dwayne Perkins who, you know, what a lot of people don't know is like Black Hollywood, they think it's bigger than what it is. It's very small, actually. And I'm so grateful for those who teach me because Dwayne Perkins, we had a pack where it's like, if you get a show first, I'm going to teach you what I know. And I'm like, if I get something, I'm going to teach you what I know. It's the barter system in which Black people created in ancient Kemet, you know, where it's like, I'm teaching you, you teaching me. And he taught me how to card. He was like, Sheed, you're going to have to know this one day. And I'll never forget when Shantira Jackson, she had got a show before I did. And she was like, I said, well, what are you doing there? She's like, oh, I'm doing what's called like beats. And I was just taking all this in. So when I got my shot, I was ready and I'm unstoppable.
So I love like, that though. It's a constant quest for knowledge because it is inner talent. And also, you know, people, and I know people that they have that talent, but they haven't got that opportunity yet, or they haven't been able to do it. And that's what's so wild. So right now you know, the world is kind of opening up for you. You are ready. You have that talent. And I think Jury Duty, even though you've written on all of these amazing shows you've been on, was the, I was even watching your reel, the Black Lady Sketch Comedy Show on HBO, which is awesome. You've been on these amazing things, written on these amazing things, but Jury Duty kind of comes along. And what was the audition process for this? Because you obviously have that improv background. Can you take us through what that audition process was for Bailiff Nikki?
Of course. And before I go in there, because I'm going to dive deep into there, I have to give a shout out to people like Ashley Nicole Black and Natasha Rothwell.
So good.
When I moved to LA, I've already been very close with Ashley Nicole Black from the Chicago comedy scene. But Natasha Rothwell reached for me just because Cecily was like, yo, you got to know her. She's great. And she was like, I think I got a role for her in Insecure. That's how that happened, where she was literally like, she improvises, we got her. And Ashley Nicole Black was like, Sheez, I heard you moved to LA. I'm sending you this audition. Go kill it. Killed it for Black. And it was in all of those things, it's improvisation, me just being, me choosing an accent and doing it. So that's how that, again, I'm forever grateful for the people like that. But Jury Duty, here comes what was the year? We're right out of pandemic. We're still kind of in it. Still, we didn't know what was going on. I don't think anybody did. So it's 2021, December. Things are still slow with everything because we're in pandemic. I get this email and my managers are like, yo, we don't know what this is. It just says court show. And it literally... So yeah, I get this email from my manager. They're like, Sheez, we need you to get this audition on tape. I was like, okay, cool. Where are the sides? And for those who don't know, sides are like, you know, it's a breakdown of the script, just a certain section of what they want you to say. He was like, they say it's an unscripted show, so they need you to do beats of improv. And he's like, they just sent a description of what they want you to do. I get the email and it's like, the first email I got, it was like, you're a juror, be you, but you just found out that you are going to be sequestered from a court or something for the trial. So me, I'm such a nerd. I'm like, let me research what sequester means. And the first thing, I was like, wait a minute, but I watched People versus O.J. Simpson, and they was They was sequestered for like months. So I'm like, damn. So I rewatched People versus OJ Simpson, was like, damn, this is crazy. I know I would kind of be like one of these people if I got to be sequestered from everything I know. So I taped my self-tape. It was one to three minutes. I did like a minute and just went in. I just went in of how I would be if I was a juror that found out I got to be away from everything that I know for like a month or month or so. They turned it in, came back. We get a call back. They're like, okay, we need you to, you're no longer a juror. You just found out, they said you're a tenured or seasoned officer, a bailiff. You're the, you run the courthouse and you just found out that this group of people that you'll be over just got sequestered. And which means, you know, when your jurors are sequestered, you're sequestered. I got to, you know. So I'm like, okay, I guess, you know, I put it on tape, but this time I just went off. Cause I'm like, what would a black woman cop be? Also, we're not finna act like 2020 black people didn't set it off. We were tired. We were, the last thing I wanted to be was a cop. Mind you, I have respect for everybody. I have people in my family who served in the military and in law enforcement. So I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is that I was already tired. I'm like, you want me to be this cop? Let me. So what I did was I channeled what it would be like to be a black woman law enforcement. While at the same time being who I am, because I'm like, I'm caring. I'm funny. I'm going to look out for my people. And if I'm in charge of these people, I'm going to look out. But still be like, don't play with me.
Yeah.
And I just fired off. And literally, one of it, what was crazy is one of the writers of Jury Duty, he's like my brother. His name's Evan Williams. He had called me and he was like, Sheeds, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm at home writing, doing whatever I was doing. He's like, we just watched your audition, your callback for this bailiff character. And you got everybody in here. They're watching it again. He's like, they can't stop watching. They're crying. And I was like, oh, that's dope. I said, well, hope it's me. And he was like, I don't think it's anybody else. I was like, oh, and you know, I'm still one of those people. I'm seasoned in the game now where, you know, LA and Hollywood could go either way. You could have somebody tell you, you great.
To
Sunday.
You're the second coming and you'll never hear from him again.
But what happened was they ended up calling. And I enjoyed Christmas, and they ended up calling in January. Like, it was Nick Hatton, one of the EPs, and Cody Heller, the showrunner. They ended up calling my people in January, like, yo, we want her to be a part of this show. Still didn't know what it was, just knew it was an unscripted court show. That's all they said.
And so you didn't know that they were taking one person, and this was going to be based around whoever they picked as this juror.
I didn't know
that.
You
did not know that.
Until the day we started, because we started like a month before Ronald even came into the picture.
That's what I was going to ask. You had to like train to like every possible scenario. Yep. How do you guys as a group of people, you have to establish those relationships. You can't like try to be funny because they want naturalism. No, so they've got to cast to that.
Yeah. So our first day was like in the middle of January, and we had this meeting where all you found out who you were working with. And then that's when they laid it on us, like, hey, you know, everybody introduced themselves. And they're like, you guys are here because we're doing a show. It's top secret. It still hasn't. It was untitled. It was just called Court Show. And they're like, we're going to take this one person. And they used Truman Show as an example, but they also used a lot of like Sacha Baron Cohen things and The Office type structure. And they were like, you know, we are going to do this. And I was just like, holy shit. And then I saw they gave us each layouts of like, they said, these are your characters. And then they pulled me to the side with Judge Allen, who also is a Chicago and I love him dearly. And
he was great. Like,
and they pulled me with Evan, who ended up being one of the lawyers. He was the lawyer who just kept fucking up with the guy and Trish. And they were like, when they pulled me aside with Judge Allen, they were like, we want you two to work together because you guys are running this courthouse. And then they said, Sheeds, we don't know if you have any like, because Judge Allen is really a lawyer. Trisha is really a lawyer. I had no background in law enforcement. So I spent like the first couple weeks just like researching and looking at different things. I watched a lot of People versus O.J. Simpson.
That's what I was like. You just kept watching the People versus O.J. Simpson again and again.
And I watched, you know, shout out to Niecy Nash Betts. I love her. Congratulations to her too. I watched Reno 911 because, I mean, that character she did was the shit. And also she was a black woman in law enforcement. So I watched just a lot of things and then I was like, be yourself, like be everything that you are, be the writer in you, be the comedic actress that you are, be the comedian that you are. And then go. And I dug from a very real place. And that's where you had bailiff officer Nikki Wilder. And she was born from there. And I just dug into my improv chops and just was like, yeah, this is what I'm going to do.
But even if you're doing that, you still have to like rely on these other 10 people plus Ronald plus all, you know, it's like such a crapshoot if this is going to work or not. And also with actors, you kind of are in your own head sometimes. Mm-hmm. Like, that first week of filming, how did you think it was going? Did you think it was believable? Did you think it was like, when did you know this was going to work?
I didn't pretty much, what helps me is I didn't worry about that stuff. And then especially with me being the person who ran the court and had to make sure the jurors were in order, I was like, they can't see me sweat, because if they sweat, then it's going to be so. There were a lot of times where I had to bring that control back in, and I'm very, very observant. And the thing about like where most people, you kind of find out your first day of improv classes, wherever you go, you find out who's going to be them ones and who's not going to do this anymore. The people who aren't going to do this anymore are people who, one, force it, and people who don't know how to give gifts. I am a genius at giving gifts. I will, you know, throw some out there, like Barb, she was Susan on the show, the older woman, hilarious, lady, and such a sweet and amazing actress. I love her. There were things we used to do where I would just reel her in, where she'd be like, I have to go to the bathroom. And I'm like, you know what? We're not doing this. I just like, and that would pull Ronald in to be like, geez, well, should I ask her? Can she go to the bathroom? Little things, little treats, or like, there was this one. I wish they come out with a blooper reel. I think they're going to do it because I think people want that. There was a beat where Marsden like almost broke every time I would do this. There was a gift shop in the courthouse where you could buy like food and stuff like that. And there was Cracker Jacks in there, like boxes of Cracker Jacks. Like, who the fuck still eats Cracker Jacks? But I would take Barb did something. And I was like, you know what? I said, you need to chill out, stay awake. And I'm like, they got Cracker Jacks in there. That should be a nostalgic moment for you. And Marsden just like lost it. And she was like, well, if you saw Cracker Jacks, why wouldn't you bring me one? Like, this was like a back and forth thing. And the same with each of them. Like, I could name all the characters, and there's moments with us that, because it was just about giving gifts to each other.
Relationships,
It was like, because this Ronald is a real person. You have to be real. How would you be in this setting?
Yeah, anything I mean, you were on top of Marsden and Gladden yelling at them like, hey, don't talk too much, because that's what an actual bailiff would do. Yes. But it's so great because, you know, you can tell it really enforces Ronald believing the idea that this is all real, that this is, it really helps that, all of that. And then we even see you at the hotel when they're sequestered, you're going into the room.
When Todd's behind me, like, it's like,
oh God,
no, who would allow that? Like, I don't like that. I'm like, stop doing that shit. I'm sitting here giving you instruction and you all up on me. What law enforcement would let you behind? But it was like, that's what made, those were the believable points, to the point where he didn't think I was a fake. He didn't know. He still was.
You were so, I mean, it was so thrown away. Like, you really believed this is a real person. This was like, you know, like there was no flaws. The only flaw, by the way, you had one of the only on-camera mistakes, actually, where you-
Which turned into a gift. Yes.
Explain to the audience, because I want everybody to watch this. You can stream it on Freevee. It's really just a genius show that I don't think you're going to see come this way for a while. But explain what I'm talking about to the audience.
So there's a beat in the show, spoiler alert for those who haven't watched it, but just watch it because it's still not going to give it full away. You have to get to that point to know what we're talking about. So again, like I said, the writer in me was always coming out where I would call my showrunner and they would have these morning roundabout meetings with me. Jake, our beloved director, Cody Heller, showrunner, and Nick Hatton. They would have beat meetings with me and Andrew. And they would be like, Shoes, you know, what have you picked up from like being around them? Blah, blah. These are your beats for today. Cause mind you, it's unscripted. So I just had beats of like, gonna go pick them up here, gonna go to court here, gotta have lunch here. And so I'm like, okay. I was like, hey guys. So I was researching and officers in the court have their own office. I'm like, where am I going when I'm doing all this stuff for them? I'm like, I need a space that looks realistic that Ronald sees me going into where I'm at. And they were like, they literally built the room the next day. I came in, they built a sheriff's office for me. So in that office, because none of these people were able to have their phones on them, because in court, you can't have your phone, especially if you're sequestered. I had their phone. Some of them would leave it in like, you know, lockers upstairs after we would drop him off at the hotel. But most of them kept it in my office, like including Cassandra, like Maria and Ish, Lonnie, the one who played Lonnie.
Yeah.
And so on their bathroom breaks, because mind you, Ronald doesn't know we're actors. They would come into my office and be like, hey, Shoes, you know, can I check my message, blah, blah. And I'm like, yeah, hurry up, you know. And one day, mind you, our call times were anywhere between 4:30 a.m. and 5 a.m. because we had to get ready, rehearse our beats, and then go pick up Ronald at 8:30 in the morning.
Gosh.
And be ready for court at 9. So just to let people know how much work went into this, and you still don't know what's going to happen. So we had an early call time that day. Mind you, we're a month in by this time. 2 months in for us, 1 month for him. We're almost there. We know that this is about to be over in another week, hopefully. I'm tired because I'm two people. I'm like, it was just a day. It was just a day. It was like a 4:30 call time. I remember this shit like it was yesterday. And I remember in my office, she had asked to see her phone. Cassandra has two children. Well, now she has two children. She had a baby at the time. And she's like, I just need to check on my son. I'm like, I get it. Go ahead. And she had her bag in the hallway, but she was in my office. So in that moment of like, she was Cassandra. She wasn't Vanessa to me. My brain was like, okay. So when it was time to go, I'm the person who has to check behind them, make sure everybody's out of the washroom. And I was like, can you get that bag? I was like, that's Cassandra's bag. Now pause right there. There's no Cassandra in this. Her name's Vanessa. But if you watch the show, every morning there's this black woman in the audience part, like in the courtroom part, because there are people who come to, you know, do cases. Yeah. Every day. And this is just who I am as a person. I'm going to speak to the janitor, the CEO. I don't care. I'm always going to be kind and speak. I spoke to that woman every day. Her name is Jacqueline. On Instagram, it's Jacqueline Actor. I love her. She's so sweet. And every day I would just talk. She was an extra. I would just talk to her. And she'd be like, how are you doing? How's everything? I'm like, good, blah, blah. Thank God I did that. Because guess what? To anybody out there up and coming, please know that all the pieces matter. All the pieces matter. When that point came, when my brain clicked in, I was like, oh, shit. And you see me on the show be like, oh, my God. I just said her name.
And Ronald could clock it. Ronald could clock it. Yeah.
Ronald clocked. He was like, we don't have a Cassandra. He's like, we don't have a Cassandra, do we? So I'm like, shit. So I grabbed the bag in my office off camera. Y'all saw it when I text Cody. So they met me in the office and they were like, what are you going to do? I said, I got this. I went, and while they were on lunch, they went back to lunch. I grabbed Jacqueline. I said, Jacqueline, you're Cassandra. Today you have a name. This is your bag. You forgot it in the hallway. She said, all right. So when we went back in court, I stopped purposely in front of Jacqueline and said, hey, Cassandra, how you doing? You got your bag. And Ronald, he just nods his head. Because here's the thing. That's the gift of improv, is giving gifts. And I gave Jacqueline, first, she went from being extra number maybe 157 to now her name is Cassandra.
That's perfect. It's perfect.
So I was
like,
don't never let them see you sweat. And I told
her. And it makes it so exciting in the show for us, the audience, to be on the edge of our seats of did this blow it? And then go, oh my God, it got saved. And it's such an exciting moment. And that's what, like, those little gifts, like you said, those mistakes can be turned into gifts in real life, you know?
In real life, even in real life, it can be. It you know, that was real life where it was like, you see everybody just kind of like, whew. Like, thank God, because Ish, I love Ish. He's great. He's a great improviser and actor as well. But he played Lonnie. He was like, I think he found out. I think he found out. And I had told him, that's when I had to tap into Sheets too. I was like, bro, don't come around me with that. He didn't. I'm like, I got you. And I also, that's a lesson too. I got you. I got your back. That's the first lesson you learn in improvisation acting.
Yeah, and you guys all had to trust each other. You had to really, and I think that's why it works, is that everybody on that cast, there's something kind of magical about their performance, or magical that it all came together the way it did. And then it gets released, and you've been in this industry for a minute, even though you seem like you're like really young. So I'm like, but you seem like you have this insane resume. So like what was it like though for this to come out and to kind of explode in the way it did, because it got amazing reviews, it was word of mouth, and then it kind of became the belle of the ball in terms of even like award season. What was that like for you to be on this show that nobody expected anything from, and all of a sudden it was like, oh, you guys are the show?
Yeah, it was insane, because even at the time when they told us what network it was going to be on, before it became Amazon Freevee, it was like IMDb TV. We were like, what?
What?
Ain't nobody going to watch this, going to see this. But I, as a believer, someone who believes, I always say, if you don't believe in shit else, believe in yourself, believe in what you're doing. I was like, it's going to be okay. It's going to be good. And all of a sudden, you know, mind you, we filmed and taped this in 2022, January to like March, April, you know, if you're counting in like how production goes, pickups, all this, you know, blah, blah, blah. It comes out spring of 2023 and it just explodes.
Yeah.
Because we're living at the age of social media where you can take clips, upload them to, and TikTok blew it up because people was like, what is this show? Then it went from being on just Amazon Freevee to Amazon Prime. And then it really blew up. And it was just like, what is going on? And so even just coming out of my first ever award season, mind you, I've been the shit. Sometimes you just need something to catapult you. I've been behind the camera forever. I've been, you know, stand up to, I've toured with some people I love dearly, who Janelle James, I remember being on a stand up tour with her, Dwayne Perkins, Cecily Strong, Melissa Villaseñor.
Years ago, love Melissa.
I remember doing the cold opens at the Colbert Show. If you go back and watch it, that's me in the beginning of them, where I, because just being at the right place and right time at an SNL after party and having Ariel Dumas, who's the head writer of the Colbert Show, be like, "Sheesh, we see you hustling. Come do this." All of those things matter. I came through the CBS Showcase and NBC writing program. I've been working. Sometimes it's just that one of those yeses is going to be what combine it all together and explode it. And that's what jury duty was for myself and for others who have been doing the dogged work. And that led to what a lot of people do not know, but now they're about to know from other interviews I did while I was filming jury duty. That's when I got the producer session call to audition for Ironheart.
Now, Ironheart is the Marvel project that we really can't really speak a lot about, but you're going to see it this year. But that's what I want to impress on the audience too, is when you're an actor and when you're hustling and when you're a writer, all these things, just because she's doing this job on jury duty, which is full time, you are still you're still getting other opportunities. And you're still having to put yourself on tape. You're still hustling out there. So you're always pulled in 30 different directions, hoping something actually hits. And then Ironheart is completely different, I'm guessing, jury duty is.
And I was in a producer session with Ryan Coogler, Sam Bailey, Angela, like these two, like, I'm sitting there like this, and you still have to get off book for this. You still have to, you know what I'm saying? And I go in there, I be myself, I crush it. I get the call back from there. Next thing I know is we want you in what will be one of the greatest movie series, because Ironheart is an amazing comic book series. And then Wakanda 2 comes out. And she kills it. Riri's one of the main characters. And that's who my story is about in the MCU.
So you guys, what she's referring to, Ryan Coogler is the genius director that did Black Panther 1 and 2, Fruitvale Station, just a visionary director.
Yeah,
and Ironheart is based off one of the Riri character in Black Panther. So it's in that universe, you guys, if that gives you any kind of perspective on what this is. But what's great is that it adds another bit to your tool belt, your arsenal of what you're good at, because I have a feeling this is going to open you up into a whole nother audience as well.
Absolutely. And it definitely is. And the same with like animation that happened, right? That was a 2021, right? Like that happened right before I got jury duty. I was, because I write for the award shows too. They pull me because I'm quick. I'm
Is there clever. Anything you don't do? Is there anything you don't do, Sheeds? It feels like you do everything.
I don't know. I do the things that call me and that I'm good at. I say no a lot because if I don't believe in it and if it don't believe in me, then I'm going to leave it alone. But I do.
Sorry,
what
I interrupted you. You write for the award shows. You write for those as well, you were saying.
Yeah, and that's how I got the animation. There's a Good Times, the reboot adult animation that comes out June 2024, right before he passed away. You know, he approved that to be made by the creator of the Boondocks and Steph Curry's company and the beautiful, she's amazing, showrunner Renata Shepherd. She was trying to get in touch with me. And she saw the monologue I wrote for Taraji P. Henson for the BET Awards. And she was like, yo, she hit the she hit the EPs up over there and like, yo, Rashida Sheeds, I keep seeing her name. How can y'all connect me with her? Next thing I know, I'm connected with her. She's like, I know you would be the perfect person to be a writer and help me land this plane for Good Times. She told me what it was. I prayed on it. I landed on a flight and I was like, I definitely want to do it. Especially with the Chicago roots I have and just believing in the project. And then we create these dope characters. 6 months later, after we're done writing the show, we have these table reads. I'm reading for this character called Lashes by Lisa that we created. She's like the Wilona character of this adult animation. God. And so we're auditioning for it. And then the EPs come back and they're like, yeah, but we want you. You voice this character so good. Now I'm a series regular in this. With these heavy hitters, such as not only me, but Yvette Nicole Brown, who's amazing. JB Smooth. What's his name from SNL? He's amazing. He does all the voice characters.
Oh, Jay Farrell?
Jay Farrell.
Yeah.
She's from Blackish. She's amazing. I love her. She's in it.
Just to remind people, like I grew up on like watching like reruns on like our local station in Kansas and Good Times. I watched every episode of Good Times as a kid. I mean, do you keep the theme song like temporary layoffs, good times, easy? Like I loved that show so much. This is the same J.J. Walker Good Times, right?
Yeah, but I don't want to, you know.
Okay, I'm not supposed to spoil it.
No, I don't want to spoil it because it's so beautiful and y'all are going to see how, because also what I don't like that a lot of people do and they don't give things a chance to breathe is they'll hear something's coming out and they'll be like, why they ain't leave it alone? Why they trying? And it's like, first of all, it's so different. It's an adult animation. Let's just put that out there.
Yeah.
It's so different. So there's things that people are going to see and they truly are going to be like, wow, this is great. This is so original. They'll see that it's not even just like what they think it is. It's actually something totally different. The same with all the rest of the projects that I have coming out. Like you said, I can't speak too much about the Marvel things. I just know that I'm grateful and just know that it's going to be wonderful.
Guys, it really is inspirational to hear everything that I want you to be my life coach at this point. And I think everybody that kind of hears, I mean, but we need to hear this. We need to hear to believe in yourself. We need to hear to like do the work. We need to hear these kind of things and don't get caught up in the process. Is there ever been a time throughout all of this where you've gotten a big head? Where is that ever like, is there ever moments where you're like, I'm getting a little full, like, cause you're getting a lot of opportunities. It's easy to get like carried away with that.
No, I'm very grounded. I'm very like remembering my whys. And also I do a lot of things that I love to do. I still love to watch basketball, go to basketball games. I still love doing hood rat shit with my friends. I love to kick it. I love to laugh. And here's the thing. I'm not where I want to be. I'm not where I used to be, but I'm also remembering to, it's cool to be humble, but it's also cool to believe in yourself and do the things you love to do. People be like, oh man, I ain't see you on social media. Well, I turned the noise down. I don't want to be on social media right now. I want to
finally, yes, good. Like, live your life.
Yeah, it's like, that's not how you get shit, by the way. It's not by being posting stuff you don't like. I don't have time for that. 90% of the time, I'm doing something that I love to do, whether that's like being excited about a basketball game or a soccer match or hanging out with my friend. Like, I was so excited to eat spaghetti last night with one of my friends because I've been on this whole healthy journey, and she figured out how to make gluten-free spaghetti for me. I was so hyped.
Was it good?
It was amazing. It was like, can we be excited about things like that too?
I love that. Yes. Lean into the things that you love. That's what, like, celebrate. Don't be ashamed of what you love. Lean into it.
Here's the thing, Ryan. If we can't live, how do you create if you aren't living? How can you create? How can you be dope?
How can you be a real person if you are not out there trying?
Exactly. I read to my mom on Tuesdays. Tuesday's my favorite day. Yesterday, I almost forgot, and she called me and was like, I thought we were reading today. And I was like, oh, man, thank you for reminding me. I was a little busy and got overwhelmed with awards weekend and stuff, but I'm like, let's read. And every Tuesday and Saturday, I read a chapter of a book with my mom.
What book are you on right now?
We're reading The Four Agreements because I'm teaching her how to, you know, sometimes we got to give our parents grace. She has to know how to not take things personally. So right now we're reading The Four Agreements, and after The Four Agreements, we'll probably read The 40, it's called Draw the Circle. But I have books lined up that I like to read with her, and also they're reminders to myself too. And also I get to see my mom for a beat of the day.
That's awesome. That is, I'm going to use that with my dad. I want to see if he like, it's really, okay. Two last things. You've given us so much time. I just wanted a jury duty really quick. Ronald Gladden, I think this revolves around him, and he kind of makes it, he makes it really fly. And it's so funny. I was at like a freebie party for another show, and Ronald was there. Like, he's being like ushered to all these events. He's like got the sharp suit on. Has it been funny for you to watch Ronald's journey? Because you knew him as this person you guys were all creating this whole false universe for. Has it been interesting to watch his journey? Because you knew him when he was just somebody that believed this was all real.
It's been cool to see Ronald be Ronald.
He had like a fancy necklace on. He was like dripped out.
He got the bag. The bag has changed for him. So it's, you know, I'm always loving to see people get what was always supposed to come to them, no matter when it was supposed to come. And Ronald genuinely is a good dude. He's been nothing but who he is. And it's been cool. It has been funny to see him go from like these polo shirts and these jeans to like Ferragamo belts.
The LA Times had like a get ready with Ronald. It like, he was all like, you know.
I'm like, okay. But yeah, I don't really look in too much into that. I just be happy to see people get what they get. Because you got people out here who straight will hate on people just because it ain't them. And I've never had an ounce of that in me. I just be happy to see people get whatever that's supposed to be for them, and knowing that what's for me ain't gonna ever miss me either. But it's not
missing you, and I can't wait to see what else. But you just coming off award season, though, the last thing I wanted to ask about is that you do seem to be somebody that's able to put dreams into reality, and you also have all of these amazing projects coming out. But who are your dream collaborators? Who do you want to work with? Did you meet anybody at award season and going like, I want to work with you?
Yeah, it was like this season was a season that I got to, like, I'm connected with them through like social media. We'll talk with, they'll congratulate me being like the big sisters they are. But I definitely, and I won't even say want to work with, I'm putting it out there. I'm going to work with Quinta Brunson, who I think is just absolutely amazing. I've loved her since she made the video when she was in a movie theater, the video that blew her up like, what, a decade ago. And she's like, a large. Like, I was like, this girl is amazing. But like Quinta Brunson, Erica Alexander, who's been like a big sister to me forever. She used to come to my stand-up shows in Chicago when I would have them. And she would just come and be like, yo, she's been speaking life to me since forever. I cannot wait to work with Yvette Lee Bowser. I think she's amazing. Oh man, Spike Lee. Like, people who look at me, it's like, you're going to work with these people. Don't you worry. I was around Coleman Domingo. He's so kind and so real and so handsome.
Just, oh my God. Did you see that outfit he wore so the other good. Night at the Critics' Choice Awards? It was like best looking men's outfit of the night.
Stevie Wonder could see that outfit he had. He just been fly, but like, just, you know, being in the realm of like you're going to work with these people. You're going not even just work with them. I'm going to create with them. Like I'm doing that with Diallo and Bashir. Those are people who I can't wait. I can't wait. Adam Sandler is someone I want to work with. And also more than anything, my friends. I have incredible friends who are doing amazing things that I truly want to work with. Like, you know, Marquita Patrice, Heidi Gardner, Ego. I can't wait to work with Keenan. He's someone I'm going to create and work with. It's all going to happen. But those are the people I met over the weekend, the Quintas, the Janelles, I can't wait for that to be.
Yeah. I mean, these are your peers now. And by the way, we always talk about overnight success. It takes a long time to, like, you know, you've been here for a minute and you are no overnight success and you are putting dreams into action. And you guys, you have to go watch Jury Duty on Freevee, but you have to go support anything that Rashida Sheeds Olaiwala is doing. How do we support you? How do we keep in up to date with everything that you're a part of?
Well, they can definitely follow me on my only social media platform, which is Instagram. It's at Rashida Sheeds. And yeah, just keep looking for me. Keep watching for me. Keep praying for me. If you're a praying person, pray for me. P-R-A-Y, not P-R-E-Y.
Big difference. That's huge.
Four agreements. We got to be impeccable with our words.
Yes.
So...
Yeah, I needed this. I needed this interview today. This was this really left me feeling good. And you guys, just really, what a talent! I cannot wait to see all of the things that you do with all those people you just named. And so, thank you for spending all this time with us today. I hope you had a good time.
Thank you so much for having me. I can honestly say this is one of the best interviews in times that I've had. What it gave to you, it gave to me too. So I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you. That means the world. And hopefully I'll talk to you again down the line when Ironheart comes out, whenever that is.
Yep. Whenever okay. It is, just hit up my people and we're going to get it going.
Thanks, Sheeds.
Thank you. Have a great day.
So Bad It's Good is a Betches Media production. The show is hosted and produced by me, Ryan Bailey, with Meditza Lopez and Sandra Fryer. Additional support provided by Sean Kilby, Jorge Morales-Pico, and Rebecca Steinberg. Guest booking by Ali Friedlander. Video promotion by Laura Valencia. Be sure to send us your emails at sobaditsgoodwithryanbailey@gmail.com and follow the show at sobaditsgoodwithryanbailey on Instagram. And for additional craziness, go to patreon.com/sobaditsgood. Stay bad, baddies.
Betches.